Yesterday was, in a sense, the close of our festival season, which starts with Thanksgiving and ends with Yogananda's birthday on the 5th, and then whatever Saturday is close to that, we have a half a day in which we meditate and attune ourselves and just sort of bring that whole cycle to an end. You'll notice when Shanti gets up to make the announcements today, there aren't any, which is really an amazing moment, considering that we've had a whole encyclopedia of announcements for the last 6 weeks. But in any case, part of what we were doing yesterday was listening to Swami Kriyananda read from his autobiography of his experiences with Yogananda, and then also Yogananda's own voice speaking to us, Master, as we call him, speaking to us, spiritual advice that was recorded when he was living in the late 40s and early 50s. And one of the things he was talking about, the recording was made around Christmas time, and he was talking about prayer, and he was talking about the power of prayer, and how God answers all prayers, but he answers half-hearted, inattentive prayers less, and that we should pray, and then he gives us an instruction to pray with our whole being without ceasing in this tremendous force, and he has this tremendously powerful voice, and he's telling you to give everything to your prayer. Now, in the course of the life that I live here, I often am invited to be part of people's lives, sometimes when we're celebrating and sometimes when we're struggling with issues that, you know, all the different things that come up. And I'm leaving for India this afternoon, so things always come to a crisis, of course, just before I leave. That's the rule. So I always pack like 5 days ahead of time so that there's just lots of space for everything. So when I'm listening to Master talk to us about the power of prayer and how deeply and intensely we have to pray, I'm thinking about recent conversations I'd had with dear and devoted and absolutely sincere devotees in which, no matter how much they pray, things don't seem to be working out. At least not working out according to the plan as arranged by ego self, the contract that we come in with, that we've all worked out. You know, we have it just exactly. These are my ambitions. This is what I'm going to achieve. This is what my relationships will be like. This is what my money will be like. This is what my health, my body, like this. Then we sign it with a big flourish, and then we shake it in the face of God for the rest of the incarnation, never noticing that he never signed on. Never. You know? We feel very in tune with that contract because we made it up all by ourselves. You know, there was no interfering energy. It was just exactly what I want. And there's a tremendous amount of so-called teaching these days that is all about getting what you want. The problem is, who am I? That's a little bit of a difficulty in there. The I that's asserting whether or not that I is connected to anything more real. So I had to listen to Master telling us he answers all prayers and just pray with enough fervor. And I became a little uneasy about the fervor that a lot of us are going to be praying with, hoping that God will notice. In his Whispers from Eternity, which Vivian was reading from today, which is really a book of answered prayers, that's what Yogananda calls it. These prayers have been spiritualized because I have prayed them and received the divine answer, and when you pray these prayers, you will get some of the power that I felt. I mean, they're magnificent. And he gives instructions for how to pray. But among those instructions, it begins with is, first, you have to get yourself very aware of the divine presence within. And once we are conscious and connected to the divine presence within, then we offer a prayer that reflects that connectedness. And so often, the difficulty is not even that we're half-hearted in our prayer, is that we are asking God, it's like going over to Nordstrom's and saying, you know, I really, really like this dress. It's beautiful. Look how well it fits me, and the color is just right. Of course, I'm totally overdrawn and have no money, but you should give it to me because I want it, and it looks good on me, and I have a use for it. And the clerk kind of looks at you, and you think, well, maybe she didn't understand. Can I talk to your supervisor? You know, I want this dress. But it's not connecting to any reality that goes beyond our subjective ideas. No, and of course, the clerk at Nordstrom is not going to give you the dress, and we all laugh at the preposterousness of it. But we sit in the privacy of our own reality, and we say, this person should be different. That one should be different. These circumstances should be different. I should be made differently. I know I've read, you know, that too much self-aggrandizement isn't good for you, but I beg to differ, you know. I have found that the more people praise me, the better I feel. And we have an attention span that's about this big, less than that, you know, compared to infinity. Our span of time goes back maybe till yesterday. Somebody asked me about the earthquake that happened, you know, a few days ago. It was the day after the earthquake. I could not reconstruct for anything where I had been 36 hours earlier. Just like a total and absolute zero. And we imagine that we can keep a cause and effect relationship going, even from this whole incarnation. What to speak, if you want to add and get really confused, millions of incarnations before, so that we can say right now, this is what ought to happen. That's why God suggests to us, Master suggests to us, that first we try to get a little bit in tune and then see. Swami Kriyananda made a very interesting statement, which I rebelled against intensely at the time and still do, where he said, you know, all failure is a lack of attunement with divine will. I mean, that was more of a burden than I wanted to carry. You know, I wanted it to be, I don't know what I wanted it to be, but I didn't want it to be that. And when I protested, Swami just said, well, of course. You know, God's, when we are in tune with the infinite, everything is in harmony. That's just the way it is, because the nature of that divine experience is harmony. This is the hardest thing. The path comes down to the simplest fundamentals. It gets very complicated when we get way out here and try to sort of integrate the whole story by putting together the pieces. But it gets very simple when we put it down to very basic things. And this is what our reading is about today. Did God create the universe or did he become it? In the beginning was the light, and the light was the life, and the life was the light of men. I mean, all the words that John uses over and over. But basically what he's saying is, it's in us. And that's, of course, what Master says. That's what all true scripture and all true saints tell us. It's in us. It is our own nature. And if we have any modicum of faith in that, of course, if you don't believe it, then, you know, perhaps you should go somewhere else, because you're not really going to hear a different message here. I was so... you know, this isn't for everyone. This is not a contest. You know, we don't like have the Ministers Association get together and compare numbers every Monday. You know, there's nothing. There's no lottery. Nobody's winning. I was just totally amused in a horrible way. This is completely off the subject, but only slightly. So let me hold my place. What was my place? God is within you, yes. There was a televisional documentary. I just saw a fragment of it once. I remembered it so vividly. They decided, the question was being raised, that there might be some connection between the thoughts we think and the way the physical body feels. That there might be a mind-body connection in terms of the diseases that we get. So some television person decided that they wanted to really go deep into this subject. So they were going to interview sick people and ask them, do you think that there's a mind-body connection? Do you think that your thoughts made you ill in any way? So I just remember them sort of barreling into some hospital room, an oncology ward where this woman was dealing with cancer. They stick the microphone in her face and said something like, do you think your thoughts had anything to do with your getting cancer? I loved her. She said, hell no, just like that. She said, bad enough, I have cancer. I'm certainly not going to be responsible for it. Sure. Go right ahead. No, it's just like we will believe what we have experienced. And so the only way that the path of self-realization works is if in some tiny part of us we have touched in within ourselves to the fact that there's this underlying layer of bliss. And whether we've had, you know, lots of flashing lights and the whole world dissolving into millions of sextillions of worlds going like this and that. But as Master writes in Autobiography of a Yogi, the chapter on cosmic consciousness, we listened to that yesterday, Swami reading that in his recording of Autobiography of a Yogi. Incredible description of Master just going out into the infinite and watching the universe just pulsate as light. It was absolutely thrilling. Well, whether you've had that experience or just feeling a little less terrible than we usually feel, whatever it is, this belief begins, which turns into faith, that in my deepest part, there is a divine reality, and that divine reality is bliss and love and comfort. Jesus, when he was trying to describe the Om, and he couldn't use the words, that the explicit words, everything had to be a little hidden in his time, he described it as the comforter. And that's the same vibration of spirit that Master calls the Divine Mother. Jesus said, God will send you the comforter after I am gone, the comforter. Isn't that a beautiful phrase? So somewhere in our experiences of incarnations, we need to come to the understanding that God is the comforter. And the closer we come to that self-evidently, the more we're going to have of everything that we're seeking. In the meantime, we give energy to the world around us, and that world bounces back some of the light that we give it, and we think that the source is what's bouncing back to us. It's like everything is shiny, and we're the little headlights, but the headlight's shining from behind us, and we don't know it. It's like a little thing up here. It's actually right here, but let's say it's here. And so you look around like that, and all these little shiny things, attracted by the light, we try to get them. And we don't understand that they're evanescent and not really the source, that the source is within. So when we talk, and now I'm explaining to myself, and I'm not going to be so rebellious about this anymore, I'm explaining it to me as I explain it to you, when we use the word failure is a very interesting word, because if through the course of a lifetime everything goes wrong, but at the end we have divine consciousness, was that a success or a failed life? There was a disciple of Master's, his name was James Collar. Master described him, Master was so colorful in his words. He said James Collar had commotion karma. Just whatever he did, everything would go crazy. When they were building the lake shrine, I can't remember exactly what the circumstances were, but Master had a BB gun there because a lot of ducks or something would come, and he was trying to plant the lake with fish. And every so often, Master would fire the BB gun in order to scare the ducks away. So James Collar was there by himself, and the ducks were coming, and he wanted to solve the problem. So he got the BB gun, and he shot the BB gun, managed to kill two ducks, be spied by the neighbors, reported to the police come. You know, this was just like commotion karma. Just some little gesture, no matter what he did, it would just roll out into one problem after another. So much so that Master had to ask him not to live at Mount Washington. He sent him away from the monastery because he was just unsuited for the life there. But Master said he was going to be liberated in this lifetime. And Master himself said to Swami, I don't know how, but Divine Mother tells me so. Because Master was not beyond having a sense of humor too, you know, looking at this. Because the only failure there is the failure to be in tune with the divine within us. Because we are made of that reality. And the only life that is in us is the light of God. And we can actually pray our little hearts out to have God give us something that doesn't belong to us. But just like the clerk at Nordstrom's, he's not going to do it because he can't. You know, that clerk may think, indeed, the dress is beautiful on you, but she just can't give it to you. It's not within her power to do that. And so the divine, even though we think that he's omnipotent, but he can't act outside the laws of creation itself. And the law of creation is our power, our success, the flow, our happiness comes to us the closer we are to that divine reality within us. And Master's book of answered prayers is extremely interesting, Whispers from Eternity. We just did a class on it in December. Because he goes through all the different circumstances of life and tells us how to pray about them. Of financial difficulties as one. There's one of the prayers that it says, I care not how much I accumulate, just meet my needs, Lord. You know, because sometimes, in fact, in Master's life, there was a man from Mexico who had lived in a very lavish style, but then lost his job and kept asking Master to help him, you know, get his job back, restore his position. Master never answered him directly, but Master helped him so that he wasn't hungry. But Master never restored to him the wealth that he had known before. because it wasn't in harmony with where God wanted to take that soul. And so for all of us, I was, again, during the course of the last few months, a friend in really serious difficulties. But in a circumstance, and I believe I've shared this in here, but it's worth repeating again, and it's been very much on my mind. It just doesn't leave my mind. In very difficult circumstances that are producing great unhappiness in her life, but all of those circumstances are being created by the selfishness of others. And the selfishness of those others is extremely deep-seated. You know, there's just nothing that can be done about it. It's not like, oh, excuse me. You know, the whole trajectory of your karma, you know, you're just misguided. Oh, am I? Like my slip is showing. Oh, I think I'll just transform myself to meet this whole standard that has never even occurred to me. Not possible. When my parents were toward the end of their life and both of them were disintegrating, as elderly people often do, my mother was suffering from Parkinson's, and which is not a pleasant way to end your life, and it was challenging for her. I think in some ways more challenging for me. My father, because it was just too much of a strain, began to take a little vacation, a little mental vacation, and he got very happy, but he wasn't always really connected to what was going on, so it was an adventure. And there was a period of time when it was all like really gathering steam, when I really began to become extremely tense. And I was just pushing for things to be any way other than the way they were. And I had several very interesting moments, and I was really trying to, you know, make God do it. After all, pray with real intensity. Here I am. I've been a disciple of Master all these years. Swamiji says the good karma of our spiritual life goes over it to those that we love, and they'll all be helped. So, all right, Master, do something. And he didn't. Not at all. Not for a really long time. Just nothing. In fact, things just got worse and more chaotic, and it was a wild story. And then one day, it just occurred to me, just so self-evidently, that I wasn't praying from inside their reality. I was praying from inside mine. Which is, I'm standing here and I'm shaking my fist at the flow of their attunement with the divine and demanding that it be different. I want your attunement to be like my attunement. I want your experience to be my experience. In other words, here I am with my contract, shaking it at the world. And it was such an interesting thing, because when I just walked into their reality, you know, made myself in my ladies and thought about all the ways in which our lives have never resembled each other. We had a relatively respectful and harmonious relationship, but we weren't on the same wavelength, to put it mildly. You know, so when I stood inside of their reality, the first thing that was fascinating to me was that it wasn't as painful for them in it as it was for me outside of it. Because it was theirs. It belonged to them. And I saw how spiritually wrong it is to pray from outside someone. You have to pray from inside of them. That's why Master's very best prayer is, you know, fill them with your light. Because if they have more of the divine within them, they'll use it in the way that's best for them. A friend of mine, interestingly, this was about her son. This is a little about raising children. But like a conscientious mother, she often visualized, you know, the future of her son. He's now a, you know, fully mature, well on his own man. But when he was a child and a teenager, she used to pray for him a lot. You know, she would visualize this. She would do affirmations for him. She was being very conscientious. And about his adolescence, this tremendous friction began to develop in their relationship. So she kept visualizing him as harmonious and, you know, getting along with her and all these different things. The more she did it, the worse it got. And again, she had that exact realization that she was not praying really for his divine reality. She was praying for hers. And at that point, she shifted her prayer completely. She said, "You've sent this man..." By then he was almost a man. "You've sent this man for me to care for, but he is your child and always has been. So, Divine Mother, you guide him, and if there's anything I can do to help, you know that I'm here." You know, but it's really, the reality belongs to you. Because there's no point in this universe. And this is so fascinating to contemplate. Master says that Spirit, God, is center everywhere. That means at any point in creation, down to the smallest atom, you go down to it and there's a center point, and that's the life. Everything is manifested out of divinity, and it's manifested from the inside out. God doesn't sit there and, you know, like make it like a model. Over at the Mormon church in this area, I can never point in the right direction, somewhere, you know. Every year they have this wonderful display in the first week of December, because the Mormons are sent out all over the world to make little Mormons everywhere. They, not by conception, but by conversion. Oops, okay. So many of those Mormons are big. They make big Mormons, you know. Anyway. Isn't language, you know, just a little twist and you've totally messed it up. Swamiji, we joke about Swamiji because when you're with him, as he says, the editor never sleeps. You know, you're just in the middle of some little conversation and all of a sudden your grammar or something. He's not picky, but it's a joke. The editor never sleeps because you twist it. Okay, going on with this. Because they've traveled all over the world, and because, of course, they're devoted Christians, many of these missionaries have collected these beautiful crash scenes from all sorts of places. You know, Africa, South America, the Arctic Circle. Anywhere potential Mormons might be, a Mormon has been there and collected a creche. And they all bring them in and then they display them over at their place. It's a free display. If you've never been, it's really, really, really lovely. You know, you see little African Jesus, little African Joseph, and they're all dressed in their tribal robes, and the animals are the lion and the hyena. I mean, what else would they be? And then you see the one where the stable is the little igloo, and the animal is the polar bear and the seal. I mean, what else would they be? And you just see how the divine expresses itself from the center of wherever we're standing. Because how could you, if you live out in the icy place and you've never seen an ox, because it would, of course, freeze to death and die, you know the animals were there, so your animals would come. And Joseph would have been very cold without his little fur thing on, and the baby Jesus had to be wrapped in a seal skin because babies are always wrapped in seal skin. Just from wherever you're standing, the divine builds out. Now, there was one there, this is where I was really going, was there was one which was a mosaic of Joseph and Mary and the baby, and it was made out of 20,000 Lego pieces. And so, this was not collected, but created. You know, some man and his son had made this thing. You know, first you're sort of up close and you think, what is it? Then you stand back and you see the pictures. Then it begins to dawn on you, these are Legos. You know, it's just sort of like, comes on slowly. These are Legos. This is the Holy Family in Legos. But of course, the image that I was thinking of here is that the boy and his father were there and they had the Legos in front of them. And so they built the Holy Family. You know, they didn't have the capacity to manifest the Holy Family. They took the tools at hand and they built it. So it was created outside of themselves. Now, it's a very absurd example, but nonetheless, the divine, the nature of the divine, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was all there was, and the Word was the vibration, and the Word was the infinite, and the Word was sound and light, and from that, everything was manifested. There was no other from which it could be created. And even though we stand outside with all these fragment feelings of other, there was never any other. There was only the consciousness of the infinite coming out. And then we start within that dream consciousness of God, dream not because it doesn't feel and experience is real, but dream because it's not what it seems. I mean, all of us have that experience of having dreams in our sleep, don't we? Where something is so powerfully happening, and if it's unpleasant, oh my gosh, is it a relief to wake up and realize, oh, it's... The other day I had this ridiculous dream of, I had a car, and the car had some kind of automatic pilot on it, so I just programmed the car to drive home. And it drove for a while and then smashed into several things, and then the police were coming to arrest me. It's like, where did these things come from? But anyway, there I was, and in the dream, when they were going to arrest me, it was going to be a really, like, collapsing and unpleasant experience. And so I'm on my bed, lying there sound asleep, but I'm just waiting for the police to come and ruin my life like this. And then I woke up, oh, what a relief, you know, that I really didn't do something so, stupid. But what we do is God gives us a single dream. And that single dream is, you are one with the infinite spirit. Go forth, be fruitful and multiply and share what you acquire with others, for you are a part of all that is. That's what the Festival of Light says every week. But we get engaged in the dream and we start creating our own agenda. And there's a lot of support for that because everyone else is creating their own dream. And if I can do it, you can do it. And if you can do it, that gives me permission to do it. And if I like this, then if we all do it together, then maybe we'll convince him. You know, that this is really what we ought to do. The power of numbers. We all say it's true, so it must be true. That's in Kipling's book, The Bandarlog, the monkeys. That was their rule. We all say it's true, so it must be true. Of course, it's a joke then, but when we do it, it's not so funny, really. Because it isn't true. This isn't our dream to declare. We are made a certain way. You see, that's what it's about. It's not about judgment. It's not about anybody making anything against us or for us. It's that we are made in a certain way. And we can spin out from that as far as we want. And we can pray with absolute intensity that it ought to be this way. But the clerk in Nordstrom cannot give you the dress because she doesn't have the power to. And God himself does not have the power to recreate you so that selfishness will make you happy. Even though we really, really want it to. And we really want youth to last forever. And we really want to have things our way. And we really want the people in our life not to die. And we really don't want to lose our job. Boy, do we ever not want to lose our job, you know? And we want the people in our life to be nice and not selfish and see things our way. But God himself can't make anyone anything different than it is. Because the power, we set that power in motion. The cause and effect has to play itself out, and only when we ourselves come back to awareness. You know, in our Festival of Light, we also say, what is truth? Everything I thought was light was what but darkness. Who are we in reality? For what end were we made? Then it says, ever and again through your awakened sons, the answer comes. There's a colon right there. Its punctuation is important. Ever and again through your awakened sons, which means the masters, the answer comes. Then it says, you know, the creation of the stars and the moons and the planets, of galaxies revolving on the tides of space, of drifting continents, upheaving mountains, snowy wastes and dark, silent ocean deeps, had but this for its design, the birth of life. And with life's birth, the dawn of self-awareness. Passage through dim corridors of waking consciousness to emerge at last into perfect light, into infinite joy. Now that's an amazing little passage there because it says, everything was made, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was all there was, and everything was made of the Word, and it was made for one purpose, which is to bring us all to the awareness of who we are in the divine. The mountains, the streams, the rivers, everything is a conscious expression of the divine. Did God create the universe or did he become it? He became it, and us. And our job is very simple. We just keep backing up from that which is not us, deeper and deeper into our center. And in the process, all these things happen. But it really only has one purpose, the dawn of self-awareness, until we awake into infinite bliss.